Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the latest episode of the Red Men Weekly podcast, a show where we bring you some of our best clips from our Red Men Plus content for the previous week. The Reds might have had a break from playing, but Red Men TV have had no break at all. We've still been producing loads and loads of shows, and we're about to bring you clips from them now. Say it every week, redmenplus.com is the place to go if you want these shows in full, either as videos or as podcasts. And as ever, through the month of January, our three-month code is still running. If you sign up as a monthly captain, use the promo code KLOWP, K-L-O-W-P. When you sign up, you'll get your first month completely free. If you cancel within that first month, you won't pay a penny, and you'll get all these great shows. You can check them all out, as well as our complete back catalogue of stuff. Right then, let's get underway. First up is the Biased Football Podcast. You've got Paul, Chris, Dan and Chloe, and yeah, they had a chat about Liverpool's rivals. It's the one show where we get to be a little bit non-Liverpool focused. So yeah, check out this week's Biased Football Podcast.
Right, okay, so let's do some of the general football stuff. Everton Forest facing league sanctions. Now, this story has moved on since the show started. I've not seen any of the updates.
Oh, no, have I?
So I'm going to read this first from Martin Ziegler.
Dan's on the Twitter zip over there.
It's good news, everyone.
Martin Ziegler, breaking: Everton and Nottingham Forest face point deductions charged by Premier League with breaching profit and sustainability rules. Second charge of season for Everton, who were docked 10 points in November.
If they get another 10-point deduction, they are down. Give them 10 more points.
The precedent is set now, isn't it? In normal course of action means 10-point action. It's got to be 10.
That's hilarious.
I'm going to see if I can move this on a little bit.
Independent.
Athletic. Nottingham Forest haven't been referred to an independent commission over alleged breach of profit and sustainability rules. Okay, cool. Joe, I feel like he could have given me more than that, I'll be honest.
Just go straight to Ornstein's.
And we've got the... And Everton have released a statement, which I'm going to get up momentarily.
Canops, it's just the Premier League, in pink.
Everton's statement reads: Everton Football Club acknowledges the Premier League's decision to refer a breach of profits and sustainability rules for the assessment period ending with the 22-23 season to an independent Premier League commission. This relates to a period which covers 19-20, 2021, 21-22 and 22-23. Yawn. Okay. Therefore includes the financial periods 1920, it said again, for which the club has already received a 10-point sanction. The club is currently appealing that sanction. The Premier League does not have guidelines which prevent a club being sanctioned for alleged breaches in financial periods which have already been subject to punishment, unlike other governing bodies, including the EFL. As a result, and because of the Premier League's new commitment to deal with such matters in season, the club is in a position where it had no option but to submit a PSR calculation, which remains subject to change pending the outcome of the appeal. The club must now defend another Premier League complaint, which includes the very same financial period for which it has already been sanctioned before that appeal has even been heard. The club takes the view that this results from a clear deficiency in the Premier League rules. Everton can assure its fans it will continue to defend its position during the ongoing appeal and should it be required to do so at any future commission, and that the impact on supporters will be reflected as part of the process. So what they're saying is you've decided to judge us for previous stuff. You've decided this season to do that, and then in this year you're doing the next load.
I'm not asked, get it all done now, because you should have been down 2 years ago when it should have been handed the 10-point deduction. So And this is the thing, if they would have got that 10-point deduction the year it happened, they'd have been relegated. So you might as well just get 20 points this year and get relegated in my eyes.
The Premier League are playing fast and loose with the laws here, though, aren't they?
Oh, no, like, they are, 100%.
As hilarious as it is that it's Everton again, like, they are moving the goalposts all the time on these clubs, and that doesn't feel right either, to be fair. Especially to do it in-season, make the rule change, and then when they're scrapping this whole thing in August anyway, and then City still isn't going to be resolved, it just feels a bit... It feels a bit arse, to be honest with you.
It does, but the only thing I can assume they're doing is trying to make Everton the...
An example,
that yeah, an example of and scare Manchester City, because if somehow Manchester City get away with it, then yeah, it's 100% corrupt. But there's no way
that
Everton
that
can get
statement
that.
There where they're saying, like, you know, Everton are saying you've done it wrong. Like, Everton aren't going to have City's lawyers, and if they're looking at it and going, you're doing this wrong, City's just going to get out of it.
Yeah,
they'll get them on a technicality or something.
It does feel a little bit like, I mean, look. The other flip side of this is, we said this at the time with the Everton one, initial Everton one was, it feels a bit like the Premier League are just, this is like a warm-up. Like, they've got to prove that they can deliver upon this, and you're better off doing that. It's like having a training game against your Rezzies, you know what I mean, on Footy Manager, or, you know, start off some warm-up games with lower-level teams, get your, you know, sharpen yourself. Warming the legal team up against, you know, a pack of losers before they have to go up against, you know, the first game of the season.
Yeah. Everton can't even afford to fucking pay a lawyer at the moment, otherwise they'll breach another.
They've actually failed this one because of the money they spent on the legal case fighting the last one. Yeah, it's just dead amazing.
Can I just say something, though? When we spoke to Toffee TV earlier, they just mentioned, oh no, it won't be another point deduction, it'll just be a fine or something. That instantly goes to point deduction. That doesn't
it does
say,
mention fine. They do
does
mention
it say
fine.
Okay, fair enough.
But ultimately, like, the problem is, not there's loads of problems in and amongst this, but the Premier League are trying to implement these fines, punishments, whatever, in season when the charges are brought, but that isn't sustainable because Manchester City exists. So I don't know why they're bothering saying that as a thing when it's literally impossible.
They've got to draw a line somewhere. That's the problem. The problem is the City makes a mockery of the whole thing because that's been ongoing. And all the, like, I've been reading up on it this week, all the Athletic keep saying they think it'll be another 2 years before they can even get
well,
to
back
the,
in the next
end.
Season is where the start date, I believe, that's been penciled in.
And you know, so, and of course, a lot of this is not the Premier League's fault. It's because City are doing everything in their power to obfuscate the situation, slow play it, you know, draw it out in any way possible, which is also what a lot of the 115 charges actually relates to, more than the actual improprieties of them breaking the actual financial rules. But this is the thing, it goes with all things. Whenever you set, the problem with setting rules is whenever you set a rule in any walk of life, it always benefits some people more than others, and it'll cross some people. Like, you draw a border around somewhere, and it'll be, you know, change a catchment area for a school, and someone, it'll benefit someone and someone else will lose out. So I get your point, but if you're going to try and have a sterner hand, you've got to start somewhere. But I agree, it looks fucking stupid because it's like, clear your backlog first before you move on to this. But again, what are we going to do? Have two more years of clubs flouting the rules. And then what happens when you try to bring that in 2 years and you realise, when because the accounting periods then cover those years and you've not fucked Everton for it?
It needs to go in season. It needs to. Mm-hmm. Because it's all the relegated clubs that it's affecting.
Yes. That's exactly what
compensation claims start getting.
Like, come on. Shouldn't that have just started from the beginning?
Isn't
that the most stupid thing that they've done?
But it's like threatening your kids with something and then realising that you've actually got to follow through with the sure, it's like nuclear deterrent. Like, we've got all these nukes. Do not piss us off, or we are going to nuke the shit out of you. And that works. But then what happens when someone goes, actually, nah, you know what, I'll launch, when you go, fuck, I'm going to have to do something about
it. The other worry for Everton is that they've already sent the benchmark as, like, a, you know, a 10-point deduction for every time you breach it. And it would be mental if Nottingham Forest only got away with a, let's say, fine and a slap on the hand when Everton got deducted 10 points. So it's now in a sticky place of, well, you're going to have to give the same reasoning for Nottingham Forest, which therefore means you're going to have to give the same reasoning to Everton again, because there's two teams that can drop into the bottom two, which means two more teams can be promoted. So you're going to have all of those legal, you know, cases going on if they don't get it. But my point is, if you just let Nottingham Forest get away with it and just give them a fine, it's a bit mad.
I wonder if it's scaled appropriately. So, for instance, if Nottingham Forest...
They were like 16 mil over, though.
Yeah, but maybe let's just say, for argument's sake, the Nottingham Forest are £500,000 over, then all of a sudden you can scale it back, can't you? You know what I mean? Yeah. But you are right, ultimately. Yeah, you are.
I disagree with that,
you know, because...
A breach is a breach.
A breach is a breach.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
But therefore, there needs to be something set in stone that says if you breach... Is this now set in stone at this 10 point?
Well, this is the fans would argue not. This is the problem that the Formula One have in trying to do it. When they did Red Bull and they took the wind tunnel time off them and stuff, it was because they'd accounted it wrong, not in the eyes of how the FIA wanted it to be accounted. So they've put something in, I don't know, research that should have gone in this, and because they've put it in research, it didn't count towards it. So they went, no, you can't have that there, you're cheating on the accounting, we'll put it in here, and they go over by a million because of the... And this is the problem with football clubs and the accounting side of things. It's so complicated. They do it in such a mad way to try and get around these rules. Yeah. It's not... Accounting isn't black and white, which you'd think it would be. There's loads of grey areas. So, you know, Everton argued from the off that it was the stadium, and actually you've looked at it in a different way, which has taken us over, because they'd accounted and they were right. Everton didn't say, our accounts are wrong here, lads, sorry, here it is. They accounted for it, went, passed it in, and they went, no, you can't have that. That stadium goes in here and all of a sudden you're over. But yeah, they are doing them for the same thing twice. It's probably the same accounting problem with the stadium that's caught them up twice.
It's a bit, you know what, where the hard part is, though, it's a bit like you are speeding on the motorway and you get a flash, and you still continue to do the same speed. No, but you get a flash, but then what happens if you then get another one? You do two on the same trip. Well, you've technically done two. You've broken the speed limit twice.
You've got to slow down, boss.
No, but this is the thing.
It was only one speed.
But that's the thing, isn't it? That's what they've done. It's right, because if they're still doing it, but the problem is, right, it's not being... Because I think the most disappointing thing probably for them is they're thinking, we'll appeal this 10 points, we'll probably get it reduced, because that's what appeals are all about, isn't it? You know what I mean? Christ, look at Serie A. And then now this has come along, it's probably a bit like, well, that's fuck that. You know, so any hopes of we might get the 10 points reduced to 5 is like, well, how are you getting the 10 points reduced to less and then taking a fine for them breaking it as well? So it's a mess, because they're still answering the last case, which I get.
Also, fining clubs who fail profits and sustainability is mental.
Yes.
Just generally speaking.
Yeah.
See, the thing is that I don't understand how they can't give both of those teams a point deduction, because they've already set the bar that breaking a breach is a point deduction.
Yeah.
And it was 10 points, and therefore if anyone does it again, and I'd be furious if Nottingham Forest got away with it. Nottingham Forest shouldn't get away with it, but the problem is Everton will probably want them to now get away with it, so it means they get away with it again.
Forest are apparently claiming as well that they obviously sold Brennan Johnson, but it came after the accounting period, so they're going to say, yeah, we know, but
you still didn't.
We're clearly on the right path, and then this comes back to how steadfastly do you stick to the wording of the rules, and how actually watertight are they? Because if you then open up to negotiation, I have this with my daughter, little terrorist. You know what I mean? When I go, you don't negotiate with terrorists. You go, this is the thing. The second you go, oh, well, maybe, you've given up. You know that there's a way for you to ultimately work and get exactly what you want out of it. So how the Premier League handle this is going to be really, really, really interesting, and whether there's anyone else to follow, you know what I mean, beyond this.
If Nottingham Forest don't get a point deduction, I don't think Everton should have got a point deduction. You can't have one for one. I despise Everton. I cannot stand them. I'd love them to go down. But if Nottingham Forest get away with just a fine, no matter how far over it is, if you've breached it, and Everton get a 10-point deduction, even I'm sat here saying, that's not fair, that.
Yeah. It is all mad, isn't it? I mean, again, it goes back to the point of, is it just about it being a breach, or are there scales to the breach? Do there have to be scales to the breach?
There has to be.
But also, what's the minimum threshold? Is it the second you've broken it by a penny, then that's 10 points? Is that what they're saying? And then it's 10 points and upwards? Or is it 10 points is the most you're going to get, and it's 10 points and downwards, or is 10 points somewhere we don't know. We've got no idea of what the scale of this is because it's all so new.
10 points was 16 mil over, is that what they were? What if, think of how many players Nottingham Forest have signed. Say they're, I'm not saying they're 100, but say they are something like 100 mil. You can't be docking them like 50 points. You can't be doing that.
You could.
I don't think you can, though, in my eyes. Like, 50 points is, you can do it to Manchester City. Please do. But what I'm saying is,
But that's the point. You kind of have to be able to, because why you could just spend £1 billion. And run
the same punishment can't be true for £2 billion over as it is for a penny over.
But it feels like the minimum was 10, is what I'm saying. 16 mil in football world isn't a lot.
I don't know. I think there's a point where expulsion is the only answer, because spending £2 billion over says to me, you're not playing our game, mate.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I know it was just a random figure to put on.
This is where it's complex, my understanding.
You're not even trying to play inside the rules here.
Yeah.
The difference between the Forest situation and the Everton situation is, as well, Forest's accounting period counts for a year of the Championship as well, so that's slightly different.
£60 million for that year, aren't
they? But Everton's is also, which we've not discussed on this show, what we did when it came out initially, they tried to offset a ludicrous amount of money on COVID losses more than any other football team did. And I try to say, this is what we lost because of COVID. They already tried to basically cheat the rules as it was prior to that. So, like, this is the thing. It's fucked. And there's no two situations that are absolutely identical, which is why it's going to be interesting to see what they do next with this.
So can I ask a question then, in terms of, obviously, they've broken the rules and we'll find out how much they've gone over or whatever. If they've gone a similar amount over and it's not a 10-point deduction, that is an absolute diabolical...
Yeah.
It's just horrific. It's ridiculous. But also, on that, I obviously just said that you can't dock 50 points off them for being 100 mil over, let's say. But that's just based on the 10 points that they've gave for 16 mil or whatever. What does City get? Because City might not have actually gone. City is delaying the information. City's isn't the same. Yeah. So,
and this is what goes back to Chloe. This is because this is low hanging fruit. Because Everton have basically handed them a bunch of accounts that have gone, you've broken the rules, effectively, is what they've done. City haven't done that. City have handed them a basically load of cooked books and gone, now we're fine. And they've gone, well, hang on a second. And then every attempt they've had to try and find out more information, City have refused to send them documents over or put lawyers in the way and send things to like small courts over a variety of injunctions to stop them from doing X, Y, and Z along the way. So who the fuck knows? This is one of those things where anyone ever played like competitive puzzle games against someone where, like, whether it's Puzzle Bobble or Tetris or whatever, and you stack up a bunch of things and it drops a load of shit on the other side. This has got a bit of that feeling of, like, you know, at some point, hopefully, it's just going to go on City, and it has to be something absolutely huge and game changing. But
the Premier League, I've seen what happened with UEFA and Manchester City. You know, they have to do everything right against City, or they'll fail,
yeah,
and they can't be seen to fail against it. But that's going to take time, unfortunately.
But I do have a little bit of a thing with the UEFA thing, because a lot of their getting away with it, in inverted commas, was time barred, and that's why they got away with so much. Whereas the Premier League, that doesn't exist.
But the time bar is them just going, oh well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but that was a sort of a backdated thing that was there, that Man City could say, hang on, well, this is only dated 5 years ago, so therefore it doesn't exist anymore. Whereas the Premier League don't have that. So Man City don't have that safety blanket. Like, a lot of Man City fans will point to that UEFA thing being overturned and say, well, look, I got away with that. Exactly. But they'll say that it was. They'll point at that and go, look,
they were proven innocent. You weren't proven innocent.
Exactly.
You were proven guilty. But it wasn't allowed to be punished because of the time bar.
Yeah. They did everything wrong in that case. It just so happened they quite literally got away with it.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's fine to know. I mean, it's fine to know how much they're over and then how much is a baseline.
But theirs goes beyond money. Man City's issue isn't really a financial one. It's
lying.
It's
lying.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting to see what happens, because I think because of the fact that Everton's already been there, that it'll probably just be a fine. But if Forest have gone, not City, Everton. At this point, my brain's thinking it's far too long gone that someone will forget about City and what they've done. But if Nottingham Forest have gone over by 16 mil and don't get a 10-point deduction, but because you've already fined Everton, because you've already deducted points off Everton, you feel like you can't do it again.
Oh, no, that's the problem. Well, this is the difficulty, is that we'll go back to the season-to-season thing. Everton right now are being fined for last year's improprieties, and now they're being fined for this year's improprieties, except they've been fined for last year's improprieties in this season. So there's no reason why, if it's a similar thing, they should just get it the same points deduction again. That's what should follow. But it is actually really kind of, it is unfair that, you know, it's not because they've broken the rules, but it's unfair on that. Again, they've fallen in that crossover period. It's like, I mean,
they're trying to play catch up and get it in season.
Yeah, well, it's a bit like, you know, those clubs who got promoted from the old second division straight to the Premier League. Now, technically, they went up a division, but it was because the year the Premier League was invented. It's one of those certain things happen in crossover periods where, you know, it is a bit of a mush and a mess, and it's the most Everton thing ever for it to be them, by the way.
Well, yeah. To be fair, I remember speaking to quite a lot of Evertonians, and they were like, you know, it's crap that it's happened, but at least it's happened in a season where we feel like we're good enough to escape the drop zone, even with a minus 10-point deduction. If they get another one, I'm not
sure. Should we have a look at what that would look like?
Let's look at it.
So, the bottom of the Premier League right now, Everton 17th on 17 points with that minus 10 deduction already. They would be on 27, which would have them as 11th in the league. If you took 10 off, that would put them then on 7 points, which would put them bottom of the Premier League, 2 points behind currently bottom Sheffield United.
And on course, if they keep getting point reductions to break Derby's record.
There is something, by the way, just to kind of get back to laughing at Everton rather than empathising with them, because, you know, fuck that. It feels like they've crossed over a threshold a bit on this. There was so much fight and defiance around the first one. It's the Premier League, corrupt Premier League, just fuck the Premier League. And now, Sente Carl, our good friend from the Have Away Pod, tweeted, take all the points of Everton, relegate them, send them into administration. The club is rotten to the core, destroyed and run into the ground for decades. Be surprised if anything left of the club in a couple of years. Fucking sad. And I've seen loads of them all doing this. Like, it's gone from fuck the Premier League to, oh, fuck Everton, this club, fuck Everton, the fucking idiots. Yeah, just fucking rattle, just fuck them, just give them all the points deduction. It does feel like it's like, yeah, I don't know whether this is the last one, you know, like the last time you can sweep someone's legs from under them before they decide not to bother trying to get up anymore.
It's so funny. They're going to open this stadium and have no fans left. Everyone's just giving up. It's just like, I was saying to you before, they're all there going, God, I wish it was Monday so we could start work again. This weekend's horrible being an Everton fan. They just hate the weekend. They hate the footy. They hate their lives. They're waiting for that new manager bounce, I said before to you, didn't I?
The 10-point deduction.
The 10-point deduction bounce.
That stadium is going to be like those episodes of Grand Designs where they pour all the money into, like, to convert in a castle, and then and I came back 2 years later and, yeah, they couldn't afford it, so they sold it straight away. You know, like that stadium is going to be sold off for parts long before a game of football is played on it.
If they go into the Championship, let's say, all of their, like, finances goes down another level, isn't there?
Yeah.
Which means, could they even afford that? If they got another 10-point deduction and went down, could they afford that?
Looking forward to, at some point, the semi-finals of the FA Cup returning to different stadiums, and Everton being in the Championship watching Liverpool play semi-finals of the FA Cup in their new stadium.
Bramley Moor. Brilliant. Yeah.
At least it's got the word dock in it. That's the main thing.
Yeah. funny, and also a bit shit in a general football sense, but we'll see plenty more to come from that, definitely.
More moody people in Liverpool, let me tell you that.
Yeah.
Thanks to Paul and the guys for that one. Let's move on. It was a show I hosted this week. It's Journo Insight. Each and every Tuesday, Neil Jones joins us to discuss the latest happenings off the field at Liverpool FC. And yet this week, Neil was talking about Liverpool's contract situations. The Reds in 2025 are going to have Van Dijk, Salah and Alexander-Arnold all out of contract. So what's going on? I asked Neil Jones just that.
I was reading The Athletic this morning, as I tend to do. James Pearce, obviously, I don't know if this is because there's a quieter time in the window or whatever it was, but you were speaking about Liverpool's contract and what Liverpool have got coming up on the horizon, and one of the stories about contracts is that if I asked you for, like, Liverpool's five most important players, I reckon every single one of us would have Mo Salah, Virgil van Dijk and Trent Alexander-Arnold in that list.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd probably put Alisson in there and add whoever else you want. They're all out of contract in 2025. James says, as it stands, formal discussions over renewals are yet to get underway. We've already obviously had the Salah situation with Saudi. Already little snippets from Spain about Trent Alexander-Arnold being on Real Madrid's hit list at times as well. Virgil van Dijk, obviously now club captain. It's very rare Liverpool got themselves in this situation actually with almost the Mane, Firmino, Salah stuff where we had our three big guns all out of contract at a similar time. Now, these are all in different stages of the career, different positions, but there's a lot of work for at the moment. Jörg Schmadtke and whoever else, if he stays or goes, they are three massive, massive decisions that and contracts that Liverpool are going to give out.
Yeah.
Three huge top earners at the football club who all deserved and all could get big money at other clubs as well. It feels like these are ones that are going to have to, they're going to start ramping up soon. But if we go through all three separately, Neil, let's start with Mo Salah because his future's probably been most in doubt of these three, given what happened in the summer. Like, look how important Mo Salah still is to Liverpool. Different type of player, but he's still, you know, the goal scorer, assister supreme. We're all talking about how devastated we are that he's gone away for AFCON for a month. His is the one where I can't see Van Dijk and Trent leaving this summer coming. Salah, there's still that doubt around because of the Saudi interest. It's going to be I don't even know how you approach this subject. You say more money, less money, same again. How many years? There's a million questions on the Mo Salah contract situation.
Yeah, and the last negotiation was big enough to be the subject of a university business. What's the word? You know,
the doctorate report.
It was used as an example. It was a study. Yeah, that's the word.
Ironic that we couldn't. Yeah, maybe we need to study.
Maybe. So it was clearly a tough negotiation, a complicated one.
And since then, a team has come in and bid £150 million or whatever for him. So.
Yeah, and that will hold a lot of the key to what happens. I think from a Liverpool point of view. From footballing sense, I think there's a big case to be made that you keep him and you try and extend. You know, even if you just said you want to sign an extra couple of years, not one more year even would be helpful. Because I still think he's important. I still think he's able to play at the level, and I still think he's worthy of his status in the team. I don't think he's declining or declined.
He signed in 2017. He's played 332 games.
Yeah, like, remarkable.
Again, touch wood. Honestly, every part is like he's always fit. He's never injured.
Yeah,
his record speaks for itself. He's the type of player who you can go, you know what? I understand this rule of like, you know, oh, players over 30, etc., etc. But
he is an example. He's
a freak. He's in every single way. Like,
yeah.
If the rules are made to be broken, you break them for players like Mohamed Salah, who have never let you down in terms of fitness, injury records, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think there is a case to be made. But like, what would change? It would be what's on offer elsewhere, and you know, from a Liverpool perspective, Does he want to leave?
Yeah.
What's the money that they can get for selling him? What's the demands of his wages if he were to stay? I don't think there's any question about, oh, you know, if you had to keep him against his wishes, you'd go on strike or you wouldn't get the sort of the level out of him. I think that would be fine. But I think this summer's a decision to be made for Liverpool in terms of that. I would always lean, you know, I would have lent to it with both of the others that you mentioned, Mane and Firmino. I would always have lent to, well, just keep him until his contract goes. I don't mind. He's given enough to Liverpool that another year of him is worth more than £100 million now. But I'm not sure Liverpool would subscribe to that.
What's interesting as well, Neil, like, because a lot of these massive players, and listen, Salah is a world superstar. He's one of the best players on the planet. But like, it feels like you talk about like a player, like how stories get out. I might be wrong, but it feels like he's got like a very insular team. It's obviously him and his agent do a lot of this, and like every now and then his agent tweets. So there's a report, wasn't he, linking him with Spain? And his agent just reported saying you don't know.
Yeah, like, well, it was an old report, wasn't it?
Yeah, an old report that he's come back out and said, yeah, you just don't know, was his exact words, was Rami Abbas's tweet. It feels like it's hard to get these to get a sense of what the Salah camp wants, because the Salah camp don't speak.
But I think that
even
that's,
the Saudi stuff, we didn't.
That's obviously very deliberate, isn't it? You know, he doesn't tie himself into. He doesn't speak. When he speaks equivocally, doesn't he? You know, unequivocally, sorry. You know, he says, you know, even if you think about some of the things he says, when he just tweets in the middle of the season, he says, I promise you we will get top four. That was one in the pandemic season. He said, I promise you we'll get top four. You know, he just, he doesn't waste time sort of after every game going, ah, yeah, well, you know, we're this, or leave his options open. He nails his colours when he does speak, but he doesn't speak very often. So I understand.
I understand why.
I mean, and there's a lot of noise. I mean, look, you saw it in the summer how many people were saying things like, it's a done deal. You know, there were some obvious ones that we won't sort of bring up, but there were people saying, yeah, it's done. You know, he's leaving. It's going to get announced once the English window shuts and blah, 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 and this and that. And it didn't. He kept his counsel on it. His agent kept his counsel on it, apart from one tweet, I think, where he said, we wouldn't have signed the contract if we weren't planning on being here.
Yeah.
Now, you could read into that. Well, it was a 3-year contract, wasn't it, that they signed? Does that mean that applies for the entirety of the 3-year contract? Possibly. And would it change if Salah was to inform Liverpool, like, yeah, I'm going to do me 3 years and I don't want to renew, no matter what you offer me? Maybe. But I think Liverpool hold a few more cards than they might have thought.
Well, the Sardini looking like a shambles.
I think that's become a little bit less of a... I wouldn't say it's become less of a threat, because...
The money is
huge, and of course. But I don't think it's as easy to make the case from Salah's point of view beyond the money. You know, I think if it had gone really and grown and you were looking in January and it was taking more and more players, you would start to think, well, a little bit like the... you know, someone like John Rahm in the golf with the Livers. Like, well, actually, you know...
It makes sense to me to jump.
It's a little less sporting wise, I think, to make that argument. So that plays into Liverpool's hands, and the way that he's performed this season again shows that he's an ultimate professional. He's still at the very high level, and Liverpool are competing for honours at the high level as well. So it's moved back into a sort of, Liverpool's case is stronger towards Salah, isn't it? Really, do you want to go there? You know, don't you want to go and win, have another crack at the Champions League? Don't you? You know, you might win the Ballon d'Or if Liverpool win 2 or 3 trophies this season. You know, if they come, you know, I think they're up against it. But if they go and win AFCON, this current version, do you want to do that? Do you want to take your team to the next World Cup? You know, I think there's more for Liverpool maybe to put in the opposite camp than. We might have suspected this time 12 months ago, this time a year ago, where you might have said, Liverpool on the way down, is Salah actually on the way, you know,
you need potential.
I think Liverpool are in a little bit of a stronger position at the moment, but can change.
Absolutely.
Of course. But I think my thing would be the last thing that I would do would be sell Salah this summer. Out of all the options Liverpool have got, the last thing I would do would be sell them.
Then go for nothing in the year after.
Yeah, I genuinely would. Yeah.
Let's do Trent next then, because this to me feels the obvious one of, like, this, you just expect this to get done.
Yeah.
You can't see a world where Liverpool sell Trent Alexander-Arnold, where Trent wants to go anywhere. He's already the heir apparent. He will be the captain of the football club at some point in the near future. This one feels like it's just a case. There'll be a number and a way that you've got a match, and he deserves it, because, again, some of the best players in the world, he is one. He's. I think this season you've seen him as a character, does that make sense? Like, we've always said Trent the player, but Trent the man.
Senior player.
Yeah, Trent the man. He's the captain. He's done. You can tell how he's carrying himself. This just feels like it's more if than, sorry, when than if.
Yeah, look, everything Liverpool have done in the last 12 months in particular, but beyond that, points to them bringing Trent into the centre of their world and their picture, and literally as well at times, as well as metaphorically, but making him vice-captain, building the tactical structure of the team around him, you know, demanding more from him. You're seeing the way that he's come back, and I think he was one, you know, you talk about backing your words up with actions. You know, Trent, I remember speaking to him back end of last season, May, just before Firmino's last game, it was at Anfield, and him saying, I am absolutely determined that this won't happen again this season. You know, we won't be in this position again. I'm taking responsibility. We all are. And he's talking about backing it up. He come back like a new man. You know, he spent his summer, what was it, up in Seattle, I think it was. Or he was up in the mountains somewhere in America, or in the hills, doing his fitness training, his altitude training, wherever Under Armour are based. And he's been in brilliant form, and he's been, you know, if you were to pick your 6 nominations for the PFA Player of the Year, I think he's in them, isn't he?
Yeah.
Potentially a winner if Liverpool go in the direction that they're going in at the moment continue, I think it has, you know, that can only point to Liverpool sort of giving him what he, pretty much what he wants, and I don't see him at this stage looking to jump ship. I think he's quite happy with that responsibility. I think he actually relishes that responsibility, and I think he'll get it at Liverpool. So I would be surprised if there was any hiccups in a Trent Alexander-Arnold situation.
So let's talk about Van Dijk then, because it is the interesting one, both in terms of age and a few different things. So Virgil's 32 now, he turns 33 in July. He was born in July 91. So he's got two more years left. You're taking him into his mid-30s. I think, again, I'm just speaking for myself, but if you'd have said, you know, in 2 years' time, Virgil, where are you at with him? You're like, because after post-injury, I think we'd all agree that he wasn't the Virgil of old. Yeah. But this season, A, he's the captain of the football club, and B, he's been back to somewhere near the Virgil van Dijk that we became accustomed to. Is this more one that you just kind of play out? You leave it? Because, again, he is in his mid-30s. The injury situation's a little bit different than what Mo Salah's has been as well. How do you see the van Dijk one playing out? Because given he is the captain, which we're worth mentioning, so in 2025, he'll still be the captain. Nothing's going to change there. Like, the flip level there, a captain just go for nothing. Like, the captain of the World Cup just walk away. Like, he sold a few.
Well, Steven Gerrard walked away.
But that was more was that his choice, or was that theirs?
Oh, well, I think they could have kept him.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they could have done more to keep him. I think it depends what Liverpool's plans are in the centre-back position as well, because we talk a lot about left-sided centre-back, don't we? Or, you know, a left-footed centre-back. Obviously, that is a replacement for Van Dijk, essentially, isn't it? You know, if that's what you're buying, you're buying someone who's either going to rotate with Van Dijk or take over from him. So if Liverpool are to go and spend a lot of money on a player who plays in that position, then that's a decent sort of marker for what they're planning. Yeah. I think Van Dijk's level, again, talking about Alexander-Arnold, Salah, his level this season has been immense.
Yeah,
I think he's another one. If you're doing the PFA list,
everyone to fill the January void, loads of team of the season so far. Van Dijk was an editor.
I don't, you know, he's one. He's a non-negotiable, isn't he? Really. I could see a situation where it's, you know, Liverpool just add a tag on a year or two onto that. I don't see why, you know, it doesn't have to be a 5-year contract or, you know, that kind of thing. But I think Van Dijk, I think for the service he's given, the levels that he's reached, the influence that he has at the club, and, you know, you look at, someone like Thiago Silva, for example, I think Van Dijk could do that.
Yeah.
I think Van Dijk could go 36, 37, 38. So while it is, of course, it does have to impact maybe the length of the contract that you give a player or even the sort of the guaranteed salary that you give a player, of course it changes when you get to a certain age. I don't think Liverpool needs to have too many fears about whether he's going to be a good enough player to play for them going forward if he's fit and available.
He doesn't run anyway, so you
might. He's brilliant in the air. You know, he's an organiser, of course, and he still does have that sort of aura of kind of people stay away from him, don't they? You know, you look at the stats after a game when Ibu Kanate's played, and the duels and the sort of, you know, the tackles that they've had to make. It's always the other defender looks like he's had to do more of the work, doesn't he? Because I think teams do stay away from him. So I think Van Dijk's another one at Liverpool. I don't see a situation where Liverpool say, "Ah, you know what? Thanks for everything, Virgil. We've had enough of that." I think Liverpool will at least make an attempt to prolong that stay. And you know, I've never had any sort of vibe from Virgil that he sort of looks elsewhere with any great sort of. He was actually asked in the summer about Saudi, just after he'd taken over as captain. I was there. I think it was at Preston. I think it was when he played Preston, Darmstadt at Preston, and he was asked, "Did you have the chance to go to Saudi Arabia?" And his reply was, "And I don't think it was meant in the way it will sound as a dig at Jordan Henderson, but he said, 'I'm the captain of Liverpool. You know, like I'm very, very happy with this sort of lot.' I think that remains the case. Personally, I don't see him being someone who's going to sort of, you know, give up on his top level career before he needs to.
I suppose, well, looking at the fact, because I think the story is that they're all out of contract at the same time.
Yeah, that's a big...
And that's a worry.
But again, sorry, to add in another point, is it is, but look at what Liverpool have taken off their wage bill in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
12 months.
Henderson,
Fabinho, Firmino, Milner, Keita, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Thiago will probably go off it in the summer as well. Yeah. That gives you, and the players they've brought, okay, yeah, you know, they're not, they pay money, but McAllister, okay, Brighton wages to Liverpool wages. I don't think that's a sort of a structure busting one. I don't think Szoboszlai is one. Endo's not one. Gravenberch, you know, I think they're in a position now where they can look and say, well, who are the pillars of our team? And they did it quite successfully around the time they won the league, didn't they? They picked out five or six players, seven, maybe even more. In fact, it was around the time of the quadruple season, wasn't it? They did Alisson, they did Van Dijk, they did Henderson, Trent Robertson, yeah. Fabinho, I think, was another one. They went down that road, didn't they? And I think that you'll see a little bit of that now where they go, right, okay. And it might be that it's Salah, Van Dijk and Trent. It might be that it's Kanate. You know, we see him as the future. We see Curtis Jones as being, our sort of man in that position. We see Darwin Nunez as our number nine for years to come. You know, Gakpo. It might not look as obvious as kind of the six or seven that were around there, but I think you will see Liverpool go on that kind of retaining spree at some point in the next, well, in 2024, I would imagine.
Does the Schmeichel thing finally, does that have any impact on his whatsoever, the fact that like they haven't got a long term person in place, yeah, yet? Or is this above his head because this is like an ownership thing as well? These are your three of your four or five best players as well, but someone's got to have the conversations, yeah, and we don't know where
he's got Mike Gordon, obviously, yeah, who handled a lot of the Salah negotiations last time along with Julian Ward.
They went to the Villa, didn't they, and when they seen him on the photos,
yeah absolutely. Of course it does impact, because it's like, well, how easy is it to do it when you come into the last month or two of your time? I saw there was a Christian Falk, I think, wrote that there's still a chance that Schmeichel stays. You know, he likes working for Liverpool. It's whether or not the sort of the whole thing works out for everyone that he stays. But yeah, it does have some impact. But like I say, they've still got the people in place. They've still got the owners. They've got the manager who's obviously got a big say. And do you want them to stay? How are you going to use them? And you've got Mike Gordon who is the man, really, that even if for all of the power that the sporting director has in terms of, you know, operational, actually Mike Gordon's the one who has to. He has the final say, really, in terms of, okay, do I get the sign off? Do we push a button on this? Do we expedite this situation? It usually comes back to him and FSG.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Thanks to Neil for that one. Let's move on then. Expert Inside Time. Dan Clubb back in the hot seat. And this week he was talking with Toke Thialde, who's basically his job. Well, he's a Danish football expert. And Liverpool have been linked to Morten Frendrup, Danish footballer. So yeah, here's Dan and here's Toke talking about Morten Frendrup.
Okay, interesting. That fits the bill, maybe, for Liverpool. Because when I seen the fact they've been playing a little bit more advanced in Italy, I thought, well, Liverpool have got a plethora of number eights now with Gravenberch, McAllister, Szoboszlai, Curtis Jones, Harvey Elliott. You think do we need another one? But if he is more of a defensive minded, that makes a bit more sense. You mentioned what would probably come under the category of his strengths there, but if you really had to sort of nail down what he was exceptional at, what would it be? Would it be the ball retention, the winning the ball back, that type of stuff?
Yeah, exactly. Definitely. I mean, I don't want to limit him to being a player who is only good defensively, because obviously he can still keep teammates in good positions, and he's not throwing away the ball offensively. But I would say, yeah, absolutely. I mean, he just has a great eye for the ball. He great positioning, really, really smart player. And I think when you watch him play, you don't think that's a 22-year-old that is playing. He's playing with the experience of an older player, and also I think, I mean, obviously Liverpool is one of the biggest clubs in the world, so I don't want to compare anything to that. But I think it should be mentioned that Brøndby is the most popular club in Denmark, and there's a lot of pressure on the players there as well. A lot of expectations. It's the club that the most media is covering, and yeah, obviously Genoa is a big club in Italy too. So he has tried to play with a lot of pressure. He has tried to be under the microscope at all time, and he has tried to play for a fan base who is demanding success and winning matches, which I think is a big difference to a lot of the other players who are coming from smaller clubs in Denmark. For example, all the stars who are going away from Nordsjælland, they are creating a lot of talents, like Kudus, who plays for West Ham now. But at that club, for example, there's much less pressure. There's no fans, there's no media, really. So we often see players from some of those clubs struggle when they go abroad, because suddenly you have a teammate who is tackling you hard for your spot in the team, and you have media who are very critical, and all of that. He has already tried and been through everything from a very young age. So I think, like, on a personal level, that I think that's a big advantage for him as well compared to many other Danish talents.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, that definitely bodes well, doesn't it? But there is no, as you mentioned there, there's not really many pressures like playing for the Liverpool Football Club, albeit I would suggest that us as fans give young players and new players a little bit of time to adapt to their new surroundings. In terms of weaknesses then, is there anywhere you think, you mentioned earlier on, is passing games improving? Is there any more areas you need to continue to improve on?
I think he can definitely contribute more offensively, I mean, get a bigger role offensively, take more responsibility. Also physically, he can grow. He's still a quite slim player, and I think especially playing in more physical English football and more tackles and everything, he could probably have advantage of gaining a little bit of extra kilos of muscle and that. But mostly from a physical standpoint, he's in pretty great shape. He is not the type of guy you need to take out because he gets tired at the end of games or anything like that. But I would say maybe a little bit of extra muscles. But yeah, usually it comes with the age as well, of course.
Yeah, we've seen that with Trent actually come into the side. Yeah. After come through the academy, he's this slender kid, and you think, oh, okay. But all of a sudden, he's an absolute beast himself. Just away from the footballing side of things, ever so slightly, you mentioned a moment ago how he's had to deal with quite intense pressure and scrutiny, being at Brøndby and stuff like that. Obviously, he's made the move away from his homeland in Denmark to Italy, new surroundings. So he clearly doesn't feel like he's faced by anything. So him personally, attitude wise you've seen a lot of him, a lot more than we have. Nothing, no real red flags there, I guess.
I don't think so. I think it's also a huge advantage for Liverpool that he has already lived abroad, and he already has that experience. Obviously he speaks English already. I mean, I don't know exactly at what level, but growing up in Denmark you definitely learn English, so it should be quite easy for him to adjust and integrate at Liverpool for sure. At a young age, he had a habit of picking up some sometimes unnecessary cards. Mm-hmm. I mentioned that red card he got in the championship match, but he, looking at his statistics and everything, it kind of went away in the end. I think it was mostly a young player settling in the team, and not really a big concern anymore.
No, it doesn't sound like it. Maturing physically and mentally, it appears. Got to ask you this. I ask everybody this when I do these type of shows. Who would you compare him to in terms of style, in terms of the way he goes about his business? And I've got to say this on this occasion. Is he the next Jan Mulby?
I never really got to watch Jan Mulby, unfortunately. But from what I've heard from my father, who watched him a lot, I don't think so. As I understand it, he was much more forward playing, long passes, creative things, which doesn't really, it's not really Frendrup's game. I think one comparison that comes to mind, and I hope you don't take this the wrong way, because he was not too good for Liverpool, but I think Christian Poulsen, for example, he was one of the, yeah, I can see on your face, you're not really sure where I'm going here, but
I'm listening.
But before he went to Liverpool, he was one of the greatest defensive midfielders that Denmark had, was really, really good at, really good at Sevilla. And of course earned that move to both Liverpool and Juventus. And I think he has some kind of the same intelligence on the pitch, the same cleverness with positioning, and of course the same kind of, he's a hard player, and he's not afraid of tackling, and he's not afraid of tackling players who are much bigger than him. So I think if we are staying in the Danish department, I would compare him to him, and but let's say the Sevilla Christian Poulsen, not the Liverpool Christian Poulsen.
Yeah, as long as not the Liverpool one. Not quite working out is an understatement, I think, for Christian Poulsen. But you're right. Funnily enough, I had this conversation the other day in and around something else, and yes, his Liverpool time didn't work out at all, but a good footballer, like a really good footballer, you know what I mean? He gets unfairly criticised from Liverpool fans, because some Liverpool fans just think, that's all he ever was, the Liverpool version, but there were different versions of him.
I think he got like 100 games for Denmark, and obviously he played in that Sevilla team with Dani Alves, and
proper player
that won the UEFA Cup and so on. So yeah, he was really, really, and good for Schalke as well before that.
You don't move to Juventus or Liverpool without being a proper footballer, I think it's fair to say. On Frendrup, he's represented Denmark at pretty much every youth level. I think he's been involved in some squads maybe in the Danish national team. I don't think he's played just yet. But does he feel like a future star of that Denmark team?
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of time. I think it's right now we have Thomas Delaney, we have Christian Nørgaard, but most of the Christian Eriksen, of course, but most of the central midfielders, Per-Emil Højbjerg as well, they're all around 30 or on the wrong side of 30 already. So there's definitely a generation shift coming, and with him performing the way he is, I think it's only a matter of time. And actually, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets his debut this spring, and maybe even is one of the players considered for the Euro this summer, because he is it's definitely only a matter of time before he takes that last step.
Interesting. Okay, and just finally, just to round off then, obviously the links to Liverpool are genuine by all accounts. Premier League ready, does he suit Jurgen Klopp? And also, just to sort of finish, how high do you rate his potential? How far can this kid go?
I think he definitely suits the style, because when he came into the Brøndby team originally, actually, we also had a German head coach. And that was the most physical team that has played in the Danish league, where they were running several kilometers more than all the opponents every game. Really, really intense, high pressure, super aggressive style. So he got that in with his blood, basically, during that time. And the same team that won the league, he played aggressively. I think they've been a little bit more passive in Italy, mm-hmm. But yeah, that aggressive style and the kicking pressure and counterattacks, I think that would suit him really well. And I mean, he's not like a lightning fast player, but when he has the ball at his feet, he can definitely move it forward fast as well, and has a good eye for the right options when progressing an attack. So I think he would fit quite well with the Liverpool style. And I also think his stamina levels are well suited for all the matches in the Premier League. I don't think that would be an issue, at least not long term, to settle to playing a lot of matches, because he's always been in great shape and always managed to take really good care of himself, being really professional. In terms of the level, I mean, I think Liverpool is huge, so I cannot say for sure that he definitely will be the next Fabinho or anything like that, because that's just such an insane level that it's tough to predict. But I think if he's given the chance, I don't think there's any... I wouldn't fear that he falls through or anything like that, because he grows with the challenges and he's professional, he's smart. If it's enough to be a key player for Liverpool, that's difficult to say, but I think he will definitely be someone that the fans appreciate a lot, and somebody who can be really popular for the way he acts, the way he plays, and carries himself. I think that's something, he's definitely somebody that fans will like.
Cheers to Dan and the guys for that one, yeah, and hopefully loads of my pronunciations there weren't incorrect, because I'll be honest, I did wing that a little bit. Right then, let's move on. An easier name to talk about this time, it's Anthony Godfrey. He was in Expert Insight Seat with Dan once again. Anthony used to work at the LFC Academy. He was there when the likes of Curtis Jones, Trent Alexander-Arnold were coming up through the ranks. He's now moved on to run his own coaching academy, but Dan picked his brains about the former Reds coach.
And that takes us nicely onto a tweet you've tweeted out recently after the Arsenal game, because essentially it was a pitch with the academy. Great night for this place. Five academy graduate players on the pitch today. Yeah. Obviously Trent, Curtis Jones, Joel Konsa, Connor Bradley and Bobby Clark, which kind of was a little bit the inspiration around this show when we sat here, because you're right, ultimately. I mean, the emergence of Curtis Jones, Joel Konsa, absolute success story from this season. Connor Bradley in recent weeks has been incredible. You've got Bobby Clark, as you mentioned, even the likes of, you know, Kate Gordon, in different senses, yeah, in and around it now. Ben Doak as well has been in and around it prior to his unfortunate injury. It ultimately, to sort of kick us off on this little section now, it must just be absolutely boss seeing these lads coming through and having an impact on the first team.
Yeah, listen, I know obviously when these kind of nights happen, you know, it's a huge success for the academy, and they need to take a lot of satisfaction, and I'm sure that they do when they see nights like the Arsenal game in particular, because you don't realise just how hard it is, you know, and the challenge that, you know, the coaches and also the players that, you know, throughout their kind of youth careers to kind of get to that level. So it was an amazing night just to kind of see that, to see, you know, five of them in particular, and, you know, and three of them were actually from kind of, I think three of them were, yeah, they were three of them were from the pre-academy days, yeah, as well. So you got your Trent, your Jarrell, and Curtis, yeah, that had been with the club, you know, since they were like 7, 8, 9 or 10. So, and then obviously, you know, Bobby and Connor, they've come in, obviously the last kind of couple of years, Connor slightly a little bit longer, but you know, an amazing night, and hopefully that can continue, that we can potentially see more, because I think it means an awful lot to the supporters as well.
No, absolutely. I think it's quality. I really do. And on Trent especially, let's start with him to begin with, yeah, because you mentioned obviously been in the club for many years now, since he obviously got the vice captaincy start of this campaign. I mean, what he's capable of on a footy pitch is just quite frankly ridiculous. But beyond that as well, I mean, just how much it means to obviously him to play for Liverpool, and how much it means to the academy to see him doing what he's doing now.
Trent, at this moment in time, for me, is just in a league of his own, in a world of his own, in terms of what he's obviously achieving this year. And, you know, one of my own stories, obviously, towards Trent was my very first session as a 21-year-old. So when I got invited into Liverpool Academy, and it was on trial, believe it or not, as a coach, okay, same thing applies. As a coach, you come in and, you know, they want to see what you're about. One of the first ever sessions was to kind of just go in, drop in, and just go and assist around the coaches that were doing the pre-academy at the time. And the pre-academy session was a 7 or 8 year old Trent, believe it or not, for the under eights. So to kind of obviously see obviously where Trent was then to where he is now, it's special. It means an awful lot. And although obviously I was never around, you know Trent's teams or the age groups like that, you still obviously follow, you know, players' processes and to see where it is now. You know, Trent, it was, you know, and you know this through the coaches that he had at the academy, was an absolute sheer competitor, hate losing. You know, sometimes, you know, his attitude towards losing might not have been the best, but the way he's applied himself over recent years and again, you know, the last couple of years, some of the press highlighting about obviously his defending and whatnot, you know, what Trent possesses in other areas of the game I'll say this, and I'll say this on Red Men TV. I haven't seen some of the things in world football that what Trent does with the ball. He's like a wizard. And that's obviously, you know, talking in the same breath as, you know, Steven Gerrard and the capabilities that he had with his ball striking abilities. So, you know, to see Trent there now as the vice captain, it's absolutely special. And I think obviously the vice captain has given that little bit of ownership and accountability as well to take his game to another level. So I'm absolutely delighted for Trent at this moment in time. And, you know, hopefully he can kick on another level or two and see what that looks like.
Well, he's not even in his prime yet, is he? It's frightening, mate. It is. You're right. It is in ability to play footy and to strike a footy is something I've never seen before. It's inhuman, basically. It's a joke. Curtis Jones is another one I want to dig down a little bit more, because you mentioned there a little bit of criticism around Trent. That comes from the defending, the England stuff a little bit as well, and sort of the national media. There seems to be some sort of a scapegoat element to Trent and stuff like that. Everyone seems to pile on whenever he does anything even remotely wrong from a defensive standpoint. But the Curtis Jones one's slightly different, because that feels like it was a little bit more in-house, sort of within the Liverpool fan base. People weren't having him for whatever reason. But his recent form, and I think Curtis Jones, ever since he got into the first team, really, obviously we've seen him like hit the absolute height of a derby winner on his debut for Liverpool. But ultimately, he's another success story, the academy, local lad, proper scouser, you know, come through the ranks since day dot, essentially. I mean, again, you must be incredibly proud to see what he's able to do.
Trent, I think over the last kind of 2 months is starting to fulfil his potential to the Liverpool supporters. Based on obviously what we're seeing at this moment in time is obviously a lot of the stuff that, you know, the coaches and people that have been watching Trent for many, many years know he's capable of.
Yeah.
So, you know, for me to see obviously what Curtis's doing is absolutely no surprise to me at all. In terms of obviously what he does with the ball, you know, his ball manipulation is pivoting from obviously, you know, one side to the other in terms of what he can do. And it was really interesting to see Klopp, you know, come out, and I can't remember exactly what game it was now, but it was quite recently, about obviously the speed of play. You know, sometimes you can slow him, you know, a little bit down. But, you know, Curtis, you know, with what he was producing at the academy, especially from like 14-15. From 14-15, he really, really kicked on. You know, I remember obviously the year with Barry Adam, I think at the under-16s, really, really, and he started getting in the England youth teams. And then, you know, Barry was a big inspiration towards him. Then Steven Gerrard was a huge presence for him for those under-18s. So we knew obviously Curtis was definitely more than capable of being a figure around the first team. But in terms of the position that he plays, you've got to obviously take into account, you know, he was playing an awful lot as the, you know, the left sided, you know, attacker, obviously creating scary numbers for the under-18s. But, you know, the under-18s football, a lot of people obviously look at that and you see obviously players, you know, have real success within that. So they also think, well, you know, he was scoring all these goals, he was assisting all these goals. You know, a lot of supporters, a lot of fans think that will just happen naturally. Under-18s to Premier League football, the gulf in difference is absolutely massive. It takes time. He's an attacking player, you know, and I think what we're guilty of as Liverpool supporters is Robbie Fowler, Michael Owen, Steven Gerrard, and we just sometimes naturally think, you know, they should be obviously hitting the ground running after 10 games, because obviously we've been used to them type of players in the past. It doesn't happen like that. It does take time. And I think they're in such a really good nurturing environment at the moment with the people around them, the support framework, the loans, that some of the obviously happen as well. But with Curtis now, it's starting to click, and touch wood, and I wish him the best of luck. There's no injuries that come into play now, because he's getting that momentum and it's really important for him.
Thanks to Dan, thanks to Anthony, and thanks for you guys for listening. That is this week's weekly rounding up. Like I say, go and check out those shows and everything else we do, redmenplus.com. Use that promo code Klopp, you'll get it for not. And as we build up towards, well, there's Bournemouth at the weekend, there's a League Cup semi-final, there's an FA Cup fourth round, we play Chelsea at the end of the month. There's going to be loads and loads of content for you to get yourself stuck into. So yeah, redmenplus.com, go and check it all out. And we'll be back next Friday with another episode of Red Men Weekly. We'll see you all then.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too.
Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.